with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick Ewing. Basketball is back in New York City, my friend.
Welcome, loyal listeners. March Madness is winding down. We're in April, but we got one more game left. And in the meantime, we continue to count the days till draft. I think we're at in 78 or 79, something like that. So the slow march continues on, and we're actually taking a break from the normal agenda today of covering prospects who may or may not be under consideration for your New York Knicks, to talk about a very interesting, relevant subject, the G League, with one of the folks who I would consider best equipped to talk about this stuff. It's Dakota Schmidt, none other, who you can find on Twitter at Dakota_Schmidt. And you can also find him in his newsletter, The Call-Up, on Substack, which I highly recommend that you folks check out if you're interested in G League or player development or any of that stuff. Lots of good interviews and just good stuff in general. Dakota, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm glad to be here. I personally had some technical difficulties that made you wait a good 25 minutes or so before I was able to hop on here, but I'm glad to join you here on the Draft Strickland podcast and talk G League, player development, the Westchester Knicks, all that good stuff.
Great. And yeah, no worries on the wait. I was using that time to bang out some every year we do these really short, like easily readable draft profiles, and I've been procrastinating on doing them, so it allowed me to bang out the AJ Griffin profile. So I was productive, so no complaints
on my end.
Before we get started, I would like to announce that Strickland does have a Patreon. You can subscribe to it. It has many tiers, a $6 tier. That gets you access to this podcast every Friday that I do with Prez, Pod Strickland. You also get access to the mailbag that I do every other week with Jeremy and Drew. Furthermore, you get access to the Strickland Discord, where we talk about the Knicks all the time, 24/7. There's live game chats. It's a fun time. There's further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to weekly articles by the wonderful Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best Knicks writers in the business. You also will get access to my solo podcast, Strick and Roll, where I yell about the Knicks quite a bit. Even more if that's something that you're interested in. There's further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those get you access to a variety of further things like merchandise discounts, live watch parties, listening in on podcast recordings, even potentially hosting a podcast yourself alongside us one day. But whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. Your support is appreciated, and without further ado, let's talk about the New York Knickerbockers.
How did you kind of get so interested in the G League in the first place? I'm just curious.
After I graduated from high school, geez, it's about to be about 10 years ago. After I graduated from high school, in high school, I did some podcasting and did some like general NBA writing, some Milwaukee Bucks writing, because I'm from Wisconsin. But I wanted to take a different route than, you know, everybody. Like, at that point, there were, you know, so many, you know, obviously general NBA writers, beat writers, people blogging for, you know, SB Nation, or at that time ESPN, the ESPN True Hoop sites. And I wanted to take my, you know, own route in basketball rather than follow the route of, you know, so many people that write about NBA or write about the teams. And I noticed that then it was called the D-League, and it was at a much lesser state than it is now. But I decided to go that route. Also, I've always been a fan of, like, you know, back in like in the PS2 days, I always in NBA Live or NBA 2K franchise mode, I always tore teams down and tried to pick them back apart. So like the player development and team development, and that kind of brought me into the D/G League, and always, you know, just also, you know, being a fan of those diamond in the rough type of players.
That's awesome, and definitely hats off to you for kind of identifying that and deciding to really get into it. And it's something not a lot of folks, you know, there's a lot of people who love basketball and a lot of content out there, but really not that much in the way of G League content, or let alone back then D League content. And this gets on one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, which is before we get into the Westchester Knicks or player development or anything like that, like back when it was the D League, you know, I didn't even like calling it like the minor leagues of the NBA, which is how I would explain it to people who are not familiar with the NBA, like my wife or something. And, you know, you'd get a call up here or there to become a role player off the bench or something like that. But as time has gone on, you know, it's become more teams have decided to invest in their own G League affiliates, and you have more players who have come from the G League and become more than role players. You have the Ignite, and, you know, which is a whole nother world of the G League that they're, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's only the first of what'll end up being many developmental teams in the G League. So it's changed so much in the last couple of years. What do you think has been, like, what are your thoughts on how the G League has changed? And do you ever wonder or think about, like, what the G League will look like in, like, 5 years from now?
Yes, I do all the time. And I just look at the NBA. And, you know, some of the players that surround teams, like, look at Christian Wood. Mm-hmm. Look at, you know, Lou Dort in OKC. Look at Alex Caruso. Look at, you know, Duncan Robinson. A lot of these, like, or even a team like the Raptors, or Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet, they both spent a good amount of time with the 905, you know, during their rookie year or during their second year. Now they're both, you know, all-star caliber players. And look at the Heat and, you know, their rotation. That's besides, you know, Jimmy, Bam, and Kyle Lowry. It's just basically all, you know, G League alums, right? So the fact that the G League has progressed, the talent level in the G League has progressed to the point where, you know, the top of the top, you know, whether it be champions like the Raptors or, you know, the number one seed like the Heat, the fact that they can either utilize the G League to develop, you know, their players, or, you know, pick players from the G League to fit a role and have those G League alums play at the level where they're able to produce and they're able to shine and help, you know, a team be at the top of a, you know, top of an NBA conference, right? That is tremendous. And it's something I really didn't think about, you know, 10 years ago when I started to write about the G League. But I feel like, because you asked me to look in like 5 years in the future, I think we're going to see more in like the line of the Ignite, but more of an international flavor. Like this year, they introduced a team called Mexico City Capitanes, which is a team made up of international players, and I communicate regularly with their GM, Nick Lagios, and He has said that he wants that team to like be the hub for like the top Latin American players. And I feel like teams like Capitanes, teams like Ignite, or, you know, potentially, you know, more teams of top young players is going to be what the G League is about, alongside of the minor league affiliates, you know, like Westchester, Sioux Falls, or the 905.
That'd be awesome. That's super cool to hear about the Capitanes, that they're not just looking to, you know, you don't have to look to be just a G League team or just a minor league pipeline for a particular NBA franchise, but you can see other niches to fill, and then you can go and do it. That's, it's just nice that they have, that they're not like thinking inside of a box, and they're getting creative with the role that these different teams can play. I know, does every NBA team have an affiliate right now? Do you know off the top?
No, at this point there are, I think there are only two teams left, and that is Phoenix and Portland. For a while, Phoenix had their own affiliate in Northern Arizona Suns, but before, like in the midst, like at the start of like the pandemic, I didn't know you could do this, but Phoenix sold their affiliate to Detroit. So the team that's currently known as the Motor City Crews was then known as the Northern Arizona Suns, are now known as the Motor City Crews, and that's why Denver was able to actually get into the G League game, because, you know, they could just you know, make a deal with a pre-existing G League team who were then known as the Grand Rapids Drive. You know, Denver makes a partners for them, and now they're known as the Grand Rapids Gold.
That's cool. I didn't know that. And it doesn't surprise me that Phoenix was the one was the folded, given the financial situation that Sarver is in. But yeah, I was asking because I remember there was a good period where a lot of teams had an affiliate, but not every team. And I don't know when the tipping point occurred, but at some point in the last couple of years, you really began to wonder, like, all right, for teams that don't have this, like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, you're ceding important competitive advantage for your team here that every other team and all these well-run teams not only have, but utilize really effectively. So I guess we're kind of at the point, not where everyone has it, but it's pretty much an accepted part of the ecosystem that, like, you need this and it ain't going anywhere. So that's kind of cool to see.
Definitely.
Kind of related to that. So, you know, for people like me who, you know, obviously the Strickland is a Knicks website and Draft Strickland is a Knicks blog, and we go on tangents and talk about other teams all the time, but it's still, you know, it's still for Knicks fans for the most part. And like, that means the G League team I'm going to watch when I watch the G League is the Westchester Knicks. I'll watch some of the other teams, you know, if they're playing the Westchester Knicks, but even other teams with players I like I love Sharif Cooper, but I'm not really tuning into, you know, the Skyhawks. The Skyhawks. I'm not watching the Skyhawks unless it's versus the W Knicks. So as somebody who kind of has the 30,000 foot view of of all these teams and stuff like that, putting aside the kind of more unique situations like the Capitanes and the Ignite, do you think most teams kind of use their G League in a similar way, or is it pretty like varied? What do you think?
I think it's pretty varied. Like, you have some teams like, say, Texas, or even this year Grand Rapids, where like their teams are either have been or are kind of centered on bringing in vets to play alongside of the prospects. But in most cases, it is about, you know, developing players, you know, that can, you know, go to the next level. Just, you know, this year, let's go with Westchester. At the start of the year, they had Brandon Williams on Westchester, who's now I guess playing great ball with the Portland Trailblazers. He's absolutely killing it with Portland. And you know, in the past, Westchester has success of having players get called up to the New York Knicks, but yeah, the G League is probably more so about developing players to the next level than the wins and the losses on a game by game basis.
Yeah, that's something I have watched a lot of Ignite games for scouting purposes. That's the one exception to my mostly W Knicks rule. And it's super clear for them that, like, you know, they have a mix of vets and then young guys, and they decided, and they did the same thing last year where they decided, you know, we're going to get you reps doing these certain things that you may or may not have done before at the high school level, but that you might have to do at the NBA level. And it might look ugly sometimes, but you're going to get this work, you're going to get this practice, and you're going to do it. And I feel like this year's Ignite was a pretty extreme case of that in some situations. Like, they had Jaden Hardy taking tons of shots, hard ones, you know, and that resulted in a lot of really ugly stat lines for him early on. And he's gotten better as the season has gone on. At least watching Westchester, there I do see some of that, like with Deuce McBride. They, you know, at West Virginia, he took half of his shots were mid-range jumpers, and they hardly ran any pick and roll. But in Westchester, they're like, all you're going to do is run pick and roll, and you're going to put up a bunch of threes. So, you know, that was kind of similar to the Ignite, where for someone like Deuce, they picked a role, and they told him, whenever you do find yourself down here, this is what you're going to do, and you're going to have to kind of sink or swim. And obviously he flourished in his G League games. It's just always interesting to me, like, if I was the GM of a G League franchise working with the, you know, the front office of a big franchise, do you use it to put players to let them refine situations that they're already familiar with? Like, say, you know, we're a playoff franchise and we're looking at our G League affiliate. Like, we don't really need to let, like, if I have Giannis and Drew and Chris on my big team, you know, I'm looking for complementary role players to help win a championship now. So I'm targeting using the G League to help guys hone those skills. But you still got to balance that with, like, younger, more upsidey guys who might need to, like, mess up stuff and dribble the ball off their foot every now and then. So there's just a lot of different ways that franchises, I feel like, can approach their G League teams. And that's what makes it so fascinating to me. To stick with Westchester for a second, like, have you noticed anything, any trends about them, or any just, like, what are your thoughts on how Westchester has been run or used, and not just this year, but the last couple of years?
In terms of, like the long term, my long term views of Westchester, I've liked them, especially, you know, when Mike Miller was their head coach. Like, it might have been 2018. I think it was the year before he became the interim coach with New York. So I think that was 2017-18, where it was the year that both Luke Kornet and Isaiah Hicks were the two-way players. And that season, every single member of their starting five on opening day was called up to the NBA, whether they were two-way players or, you know, guys on standard G League contracts. That's the year that they had Nigel Hayes and Trey Burke. So after that season, and you know, now, you know, this season or the last few seasons with, you know, Derek Alston Senior as their head coach, I've you know, definitely enjoyed watching you know, the Knicks, the Westchester Knicks organization. I like seeing how Derek Alston runs the team, and you know, some players on the roster, like this year in particular, you know, alongside Brandon Williams, who was called up. I'm a big proponent of Amir Sims. I'm a huge Amir Sims guy, and also DeJuan Hernandez, who Westchester had this year, is, you know, so much fun to watch as a big that can, you know, can you show this series a big that can both score on the perimeter, you know, and, you know, really work as a role man. So while Westchester didn't have the success that they needed to get into playoffs, they were, you know, on the verge of it this year. I have, you know, been a fan of you know, Westchester dating back, you know, almost 5 years ago when Mike Miller, you know, was their head coach with, you know, Trey Burke, Isaiah Hicks, and Luke Kornet.
I just like how with Westchester, they always seem to, it's clear that there's a plan with not only the individual players, but the team as a whole. Like, and, you know, some teams will replicate exactly the playing style of their big league franchise. And that's not really the case with the Westchester Knicks, probably because the real Knicks haven't had a true identity for play style that's lasted more than a year and a half. So that makes it kind of difficult compared to, like, you know, Daryl Morey's G League team or whatever, you know, back when he was in Houston, and where I'm sure they were running and gunning in a similar fashion to the Rockets. But with Westchester, you know, they just like the big Knicks modernized their shot profile this year. It was a lot of that for Westchester, right? Like Samanić, before he got injured, was getting all these stretch 5 minutes, and they were just, nobody was afraid to chuck him up and to do what they had to do to score and run a bunch of pick and rolls and stuff like that. And, you know, there was no way to simulate, like, oh, what would these guys do if Julius Randle's there? But if you look at what the Knicks did in free agency and in the draft recently, they've been focusing on guys who can pull up, create their own offense a little bit, and can shoot. And you see that with, you know, guys ranging from Deuce, who get drafted and then placed in the G League, and then Williams, who you mentioned is now hooping for Portland, a bright spot as they tank away the rest of their season. Samanić, who was really, really good before he got hurt. Even Amir Sims, who's like pretty versatile for a big guy, and he's a good passer and all that. So, like, I see the vision for what they're trying to do, and it's pretty encouraging. And that kind of gets me to another topic I wanted to pick your brain on. So, a popular discussion right now among Knicks fans is, like, put Julius Randle aside. Aside from him, we have a couple of vets who are talented, you know, Alec Burks, Evan Fournier, guys like that. Some vets who are probably either on their way out or injured, like Nerlens and Taj Gibson. And then you have this big kind of glut of good but not amazing young players, like RJ Barrett obviously is talented. IQ is pretty talented. Mitchell Robinson is talented. And then you got the younger guys like Grimes and Obi, and now Cam Reddish is in the mix, and Deuce, without even getting to Rokas Jokubaitis overseas, who they also drafted, and Jericho Sims, who also was great in the G League this year and is now finally getting some damn minutes for Tibbs. So, like, if for the Knicks, it's very, like, not even if I was emperor of the Knicks, I could not make playing time for all of them because there's too many. So, like, at some point, the Knicks either have to consolidate, whether that's, you know, trading a couple of players for a star or maybe for future picks or something. I don't know. But until they do that, you're left with the choice of these guys travel with the big team and don't get minutes, or they go to the G League and play. And have you seen around the league, like, more quote unquote crowded teams like that, where, like, well, I guess that's the first question. And the second question is, you know, do you have any thoughts on, like, with young guys, the pros and cons of letting them go work with the G League versus just traveling with the, you know, their NBA team and maybe not getting minutes, but you're practicing and all that? Like, I know you've talked to a lot of GMs and G League coaches, like, is there like a variety of opinions on that, or is it mostly like one school of thought, you think?
I think the entire NBA is crowded.
NBA is what?
It's crowded. Like,
oh, yeah.
when I look at the level of talent in the G League, you know, with the implementation of two ways, or, you know, just in general, when it comes to the amount of, you know, talented vets that's around the G League, I just get the opinion that the NBA in general is crowded. But yeah, I definitely agree with you on how it's, you know, how a team is situated and, you know, what their immediate, you know, plans are, of why, you know, playoff teams don't want to, you know, put, you know, rookies in the G League rather than, you know, having them, you know, get the reps in, you know, at the NBA level and, you know, risk hurting, you know, a team on a game by game, you know, basis as they're, you know, trying to make a push or playoffs or trying to make their push to the play-in. But, like, there are so many players in the G League that I look at them and I see, okay, that guy should, in, like, an ideal scenario, that guy is talented enough to be in the G League, or in the NBA. Like, I watch Amir Sims, I'm like, I think he's good enough, right? Like, I think he's talented enough to be in the NBA rotation. And, you know, if a team like, you know, Portland, you know, that's, you know, tanking, saw him, I feel like he can, you know, make a similar type of impact, you know, at a different position than what Brandon Williams is doing right now. So to answer your question briefly, I think the entire NBA is crowded, and that's why the talent level in the G League, when it comes to standard G League players and, you know, guys on, you know, standard G League players and, you know, signees, is at a level that I never imagined it to be, you know, 5 years ago or, you know, 10 years ago.
The NHL season has been packed with dirty dangles, hat tricks, and big wins. As the action rolls on, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has your shot to win big too. New customers can bet just $1 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's right, a bump in the win column for your team means free bets for you. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you still have a shot to light the lamp. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Hockey Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, bet just $1 on any NHL team, and get $150 in free bets if they win. That's promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. 21 plus restrictions apply. See show notes for details, which I'm going to read to you now, and I probably shouldn't have read that part. All right. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. That's in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Wyoming. You can call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado or New Hampshire, 888-789-7777, or visit http://ccpg.org/chat. That's in Connecticut. 1-800-BETS-OFF, Iowa, 1-877-770-STOP, or text 7867 for LA, 877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Visit opgr.org. That's in Oregon. Call or text Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789 for Tennessee, or 1-888-532-3500 for Virginia. Must be 21 plus or 18 and over in New Hampshire and Wyoming. Physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana, Michigan, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See http://draftkings.com/sportsbook for details.
Okay, cool. So it's good to know it's not just the Knicks, and I'm not just going crazy here, because it's one of those things where, you know, I'm sure the NBA powers that be always think about things like expansion and adding a new franchise, but until then, this is really what you're stuck with. You only have so many roster spots, and that forces teams, at least the smart ones, to consider the question of playing time for my prospects in the G League versus with the big team. And then politics kind of goes into it, because, you know, you look at like what the Warriors did with Moses Moody. He was a top pick, and they let him get a couple of games with the G League, but still, you know, he still traveled largely with the big team. And so, you know, if you draft a guy in the lottery, it's probably a little harder in terms of optics to say, all right, we're going to send this guy down, you know, for a couple months or something like that, because the front offices obviously value those guys getting acclimated to like the NBA culture and working with the NBA teams and the coach that hopefully is going to be their coach and shit like that. So it's one of those things where, like, I'm just, you know, thinking about the younger players in this upcoming draft, right? The Knicks have a lottery pick. You have guys who won't even be 19 yet at draft time, like AJ Griffin or Shaedon Sharpe, or, you know, could be other guys as well. But those are the two guys in the top 10 who are really young. And, you know, part of me is like, I understand that there's no substitution for getting acclimated to the NBA, but would it be so bad for those guys to just be assigned to the G League for more than a couple of games and to work on specific things, kind of like how Deuce did? Because we haven't seen the results translate perfectly yet for Deuce, because when he plays with the big Knicks, he's not playing point guard ball handler like he does for Westchester. He's more of a kind of 3-and-D guard, but like, you can tell Deuce has made that adjustment. Like, he's no longer afraid of putting up threes like he was in college and preferring mid-range shots and stuff like that. So, you know, if you were Dakota Emperor of like the Westchester Knicks or whatever, or the Knicks, you know, right, instead of James Dolan, thankfully, in this timeline, and you had an 18-year-old Shaedon Sharpe or AJ Griffin, like, how would you think about the options available in terms of traveling, assuming that you can't find starters minutes for your top 10 pick? Like, how does the G League come into the calculation for you?
If the rotation is so where that player can't at least get like 15 minutes a game, I'm going to have him go to the G League. I'm going to have him go to the G League, you know, get, you know, 30 minutes a game and just continue to get those reps. Because it doesn't matter if you're playing basketball, football, if you're trying to learn the drums or the guitar, like, you only improve by getting reps in. And, you know, for, you know, an 18, 19-year-old player, getting those reps in the G League where you're competing against, you know, extremely talented players. Again, the NBA is so crowded where you have, you know, NBA vets just on G League rosters waiting to get their opportunity to return. And you also have 22, 23-year-old guys that are just coming off of being all-conference, you know, college players, or, you know, poor, you know, second round or late first round picks 2-3 years ago, and are also looking to get their opportunity in the NBA. Like, a player getting those reps in, you know, big minutes, which, you know, assignees get, that is going to, if you have a, you know, if you have a good system in place, like I do believe that the Westchester Knicks have, with, you know, a, you know, somebody who I believe to be a very, you know, solid coach when it comes to player development in Derek Alston Jr., then I would absolutely have that player go to the G League rather than hoping that their team either, you know, wins by 25-30 or loses by 25-30 and play like 5-10 minutes of garbage time.
Yeah, that's the tricky balance to strike because, you know, it's – I know on Twitter especially we can – you know, we're like, play all the kids all the time, and the Knicks are stupid for not doing that. There's no two ways about it, especially in the position they are in right now. But, like, if you have somebody, whether it's a young player or an old player, who really thinks they're better than some rookie, like, it's hard to tell them, like, no, you're going to back up this teenager because we have to develop him. Like, that's – it's tough from, like, a culture standpoint to do that, so – unless you're a team like OKC where it's kind of a organized chaos of young guys and, you know, you're not really competing with that many older players and everybody kind of gets a shot to do their thing, then it becomes tough, you know, as teams accumulate assets, you know, and that's exactly the position the Knicks find themselves in. So it'll be real interesting to see how they unfuck the roster glut a little bit in this offseason and what role the G League plays in that. To talk about a couple of particular players, I want to focus on Williams and Deuce because they've clearly, along with Samanish before he got hurt, they've been like the success stories to me for the Westchester Knicks. You know, it's like automatic meme generation pretty much anytime what Deuce goes down there for a night and throws up some silly stat line and then comes back and rides the bench or whatever. And like, how have you, to start with Deuce, with any of these guys, like you have to, you're already covering so many teams. Like, do you get a chance to watch some of these younger players before they get to the G League, like when they're in college, or not so much, or just kind of only if it's by chance?
After the G League season is done, I try to binge as much college film as possible. But for me, I try to look at guys that might like be, you know, mm-hmm. mid to late second rounders or two ways or exhibit tens and watch their film. So Deuce McBride is somebody that really didn't really show up in my I think I watched like two or three of his college games. I love what I see. It's just his how aggressive and how dynamic he was on defense, and just it was just something that you had to keep your eyes on. He just somebody that you had to really focus on and just love what he saw of him when he was at West Virginia. But I never imagined that he would be, you know, the kind of shooter that he is or was, you know, when he was with Westchester and with Brandon Williams. I didn't know much about Brandon Williams leading into the season, but he was always somebody that kept on, you know, making plays as a facilitator. And he's just somebody that kept on putting up shots and putting up shots and putting up shots. And during, you know, the first part of the season, it was – I guess this year they have two parts, the showcase, cup portion, and the regular season. In the showcase portion, in the first part of the season, which, you know, happened from in November and December, Brandon kept on putting up shots, but, you know, more times than not, he didn't, you know, make those threes. And I think he shot like 26-27% from beyond the arc. But in the, you know, in the second half, you know, those reps started to pay off, and he was a 36% three-point shooter. And if you combine that with his work as a facilitator and his work as, you know, off the dribble threat, as somebody that can, you know, get to the free throw line at the regular basis, you know, it makes sense as to why he caught, you know, Portland's eye as, you know, somebody that they can stick on their roster and, you know, give playing time to when you know, they're in full on, you know, take mode as they are, as they are, you know, this late into, you know, the NBA season.
Yeah, and for listeners who are less familiar with Brandon Williams, he's been putting up a couple of remarkable stat lines for Portland. If you look at his season stats, that you'll see like, oh, like 39, 31, 70 slash line. Like, yes, he's not going to get an all-star vote anytime soon. But, you know, he's shooting like over 60% on twos. He's not afraid to put up threes. He's a willing and solid passer. So, like, the fact that this just rotation player was basically, you know, for a team like Portland is created out of thin air when they have injuries and they're tanking. It's not nothing. And then, you know, you think, and that's what made it so much more frustrating for some of us Knicks fans who do follow the G League, because we're like, Brandon Williams is good. But when he played with Deuce, you knew who was the man. It was Deuce. And he can't crack the damn rotation. So it was just, it's just been a source of ire and frustration for Knicks fans. But hopefully he'll, you know, get some chance to shine either in these last couple games or next year or shit, maybe even on another team. I just, at this point, like, I just want him to play. Even if it's not on the Knicks, like, I'll root for him at this point, man.
Yeah, most definitely. I always refer, I don't get a chance to watch as much NBA as I want to because, you know, between my G League work and taking care of my dog, and I'm also closing in on getting my bachelor's degree. I have one more term left, which starts tomorrow.
Almost there.
as of the time they were talking, I don't watch as much basketball NBA as I watch, but, you know, I do follow basically all NBA Twitter. So I see, you know, what guys like Brandon Williams are doing, and I just, despite how long I've been doing this, I can't help but smile, and I can't help be proud of what G League alums do when they get that call up, and when they shine, I just get this biggest smile on my face, and I just get extremely, extremely proud of what, you know, what they're, you know, capable of doing in the NBA when they get that chance, because that's all we need is a chance.
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate, like, base emotional appeal of the G League. It's like, these are dudes who are super talented and they could go make more money somewhere else, but they're deciding, my dream was specifically to play in the league and I'm going to continue working at that and I'm going to see where it takes me. So it's just a, you know, they're all easy to root for because of that. Real quick, turning away from Westchester and towards the Ignite, what I've been really impressed, and I alluded to it before, was like they, like this year, Coach Jason Hart and whoever, I don't know who's like doing the decision making at like the managerial level for the Ignite or how that works.
When it comes to the Ignite program, that when it comes to like the process of scouting players and, you know, trying to bring them to sign with the Ignite program, that's actually Rod Strickland that is doing the work.
The website's namesake. I should have known that. Slacking out here. Jeez. We might have to edit that one out. No, just kidding. Yeah, so that's awesome because, like, it's a unique challenge because you have almost like a recruiting element in addition to a scouting element, and then you have decisions to make in, about their role that can have real implications for their future, and you're not being driven by a particular team. And almost every first rounder that has come through the Ignite program this year and last year is a case of that. But the one example I've been thinking a lot about lately is Dyson Daniels, who he played point guard for the Australian under 19 team. He played point guard for the Ignite even before Scoot got there. And once Scoot got there, he still continued to mostly play point guard. So they're giving him point guard reps, and it's not a guarantee that he's an NBA point guard, right? Like, his shot has gotten better, but he's not, nobody's going to call him a sniper. And he's big and strong and can dribble, but he's not really like consistently penetrating like Scoot Henderson is. And obviously that's kind of unfair to compare anyone to Scoot, but like he doesn't do that kind of point guardy rim pressure stuff that Scoot does. So like in another alternate universe, I could see a team using Dyson in the G League, how the G League used Marjon Beauchamp this year as like a, you know, like a 3-and-D do-it-all wing, because Dyson can do that too, but they chose Dyson to get on-ball reps, Marjon to stay off-ball, and, you know, as an armchair draft evaluator, I'm trying to think of, like, these hypotheticals, like, okay, is a team best served to continue to develop Dyson as a point guard? Is it, and work through the lumps with his shooting and his driving? Or let him just be a kind of Alex Caruso type. And then for a player like Marjon, conversely, I'm like, do you just accept that he's not going to really be like a shot creator and just going to, you know, he's really good at doing the things he did for the Ignite, finishing shots and cutting and high energy and being a defender and all that. Like, these questions are all really fascinating to me. So, I don't know if you have any, that was kind of a ramble. I don't know if you have any thoughts or insights into like how a team like the Ignite can possibly even approach those complicated questions.
I feel like when it comes to the core talent that are on this year's version of the Ignite, I feel like it kind of like left Jason Hart with a really difficult challenge, because you have, like you said, you have three players in Jane Hardy, in Dyson Daniels, and Marjon Beauchamp, who work best when they, you know, when they have the ball in their hands. And you also have to give the ball to the veterans that you bring in and kind of, you know, mix that up, where I feel like the Ignite this year didn't have enough, you know, off-ball players that, you know, you had to, you know, put Beauchamp and, you know, Dyson Daniels in a role that they're really, you know, not familiar with, which, you know, is, can, you know, make things difficult for, you know, either, you know, wannabe draft scouts or actual, you know, NBA draft scouts. But I still feel like the lumps that the Ignite, you know, took at the start of the season, like, I feel like for especially Jane Hardy, but Daniels and Beauchamp, those lumps started to, you know, pay off towards the end of the season, even though, you know, those weren't really shown by the, you know, win-loss record.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, I think. How, just because this is a draft podcast, I do have to ask, how would you rank the three of them as NBA prospects? Because I've seen every configuration for how people would order them, so there's no consensus.
Since last summer, I've been a big actually before he signed with Ignite, I've been a big Dyson Daniels guy, and I loved what I saw of him last year in the U19s. And he didn't look the best this year with the Ignite, but I'd probably go Hardy, Daniels, and Beauchamp, even though I love Beauchamp. It's just Jane Hart, like the upside of Jane Hardy as an on the dribble threat. Like, he is so quick with the ball in his hands, but the thing is, when he for so long this season, like, with that quickness, he just continued to, you know, drive with the talent, not with the ball around, where I just got frustrated. Like the potential of Jane Hardy with his quickness and, you know, with a shot, that I feel like he is number one with that duo. I mean, with that trio. So I'd go, like I said, I'd go Hardy, Daniels, and Beauchamp, and I may get a lot of stuff from you know, the NBA draft people that are listening to this.
I feel like it's about 50-50, Dyson first, Hardy second, and Hardy first, Dyson second. So I think you're safe. I've switched it up. I started the year. I had Marjan first because I was a big fan of him from back, like when he was playing in high school. He caught my attention. Some people put me on, and you know, obviously in high school, all these guys are more on ball players, and he was running pick and rolls and pulling up, and he was like shooting was. I know he has bad shooting numbers on the Ignite, but shooting was considered his strength then. And then, you know, he took the gap year and then came back and taller and stronger and for the Ignite, looking more bouncy too. So, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, he's got this like Devin Vassell kind of vibes going on right now, but I've seen him do more on ball, so maybe there's a little more upside than I thought. And he's bigger than the other guys, so should he be higher? And then, you know, you hear reports the next day that Dyson Daniels is now 6'8". So I'm like, okay, so Dyson's the same height as Marjan now. So should Dyson be better? And then I had kind of closed the book on the Ignite early on in the season. You know, I love the draft stuff, but like I can't watch everything. So I did my scouting, closed the book. And then everybody was talking about how much better they were playing at the end of the season. And I'm like, all right, shit, I guess I got to watch some recent Ignite games. And Hardy looked night and day different. He still has some inefficient stat lines, but like I rarely found myself being like, what a stupid shot that was, or a stupid decision. Whereas early in the season, that happened all the time. So yeah. Like, when you're talking small sample, like, I don't care. Like, yes, I hope the shot goes in, but like if the decision making is sound, that's the more important thing for me, and his decision making has improved a lot. So right now, I can't even remember who. I think I have Hardy and Dyson in like the same tier, and Dyson. I have one of them ahead. Dyson higher on my. I have two boards: one for the Knicks, and then just a general one. And I think I had Dyson higher on the one for the Knicks because he can play defense, and we really need that. I mean, we're all right at defense, but he's a quick passer, and we really need that. But I have other, you know, there's other friends who write for the Strickland who are like, no, Hardy has the highest upside. He's highest on my board at the end. So can't really go wrong here, but I'm really interested to see how the NBA evaluators kind of view it.
Yeah, most definitely in what I hope you don't mind if I use this discussion for inspiration for a Twitter post.
Do it.
All right.
And I'll make sure to not, unless you want a specific sample of Knicks fans, I won't retweet it because we could come in and like fuck the poll up because it'll just skew the sample because it's a crazy psychopathic group on Twitter that happens all. I've learned as somebody who, you know, like I like watching all these prospects and not all of them are going to go to the Knicks. Like I'll spend like a week tweeting about one prospect and then compare them to some other prospect, not for the Knicks, but just in general. And then everybody from Knicks Twitter is like, but you were just hyping up this old prospect, so I'm going to vote for them. And it messes up the whole poll. So I'll try to not ruin your research if I can.
So I actually have a question for you. When it comes to like scouting purposes, how do you feel like watching these Ignite prospects in the situation that they're in and like the level of talent that they compete against, you know, compared to like a SEC player or a Big Ten player or, you know, a Big 12 player that you watch?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the talent in the G League, like, you have certain players in college that could come into the G League and probably dominate right now, but that's not most players, right? Like,
yeah.
You have juniors and sophomores and seniors who aren't going to play in the NBA and aren't even going to play basketball, and they're going up against, you know, Paolo Banchero or whatever, like. So you have a really wide range of guys in college. So I feel like there's a little more consistency of competition. I think generally speaking, like what, you know, there might, especially in the really good conferences, there might be a little bit more raw, like basketball talent sometimes, but at the same time, like these guys have had more years to refine their craft. And just like we see rookies get way better from their rookie year to their sophomore season, the same is true of guys who aren't in the league. Like they're also practicing and they're also improving. So just because it's, you know, some player who you might not have heard of, but they've had 4 years to hone their craft, like that's going to be tough for, you know, in a lot of situations that might be tough for a 17-year-old to handle or an 18-year-old. So I kind of view it as like similar level of college, but more physical and better, much better shooting. So, you know, that's why I don't know off the top of my head what G League scores are, but it's a high scoring league, right? Like there's a lot more running and 3-point shooting than college. And style wise, that seems to be the biggest difference to me. You know, it's more similar to the NBA in that respect. So it's kind of an art more than a science. With guys like last year, we all had to kind of adjust to it with Green and Kuminga. And we're kind of seeing a similar path this year with Hardy. And the gist is when you're talking perimeter prospects, it does take a while to get acclimated to that physicality in the G League and stuff like that. If you're talking more physical players like Marjan or, you know, even Michael Foster, they probably have a little bit easier time adapting, I feel like, to the G League. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I'm really interested to see, you know, how it goes with the Ignite. With the Knicks, like with Deuce and Sims, I look at it as more as an opportunity to see like what skills are they working on and whether that's working or not. Because Deuce clearly had to work on making some of those mid-rangers into threes, and then he also had to work on penetrating. And the former he was able to do really successfully, but the latter he still wasn't like amazing at. Like the game where he scored 40, I think he had 6 floaters, which is awesome, but like you're probably not going to get 6 floaters made shots in an NBA game, especially if you're a Deuce. So, you know, like it's awesome that he can shoot the lights out, but he's still going to need to work on dribble penetration if he really wants to be a ball handling guard in the NBA. So like, you know, with those players, I kind of use it as like, when I'm evaluating, it's a question of how are they working on this skill or that skill specifically, rather than like, oh, his overall game was good, so therefore his overall game will be good in the NBA, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I feel like when folks like look at assignees or like look at like the production of two-way players and they're, you know, putting up 30 plus per game regularly, like I feel like those numbers are misleading due to the pace of the league and due to the amount of shots that get put up. And you like to, like, if you're a two-way player and if you're a signee, you're going to get a lot of reps and your usage percentage is going to be as high as whomever the number one or number two option for an NBA team, because for a D-League team, they're that number one, you know, and number two option. So if your usage percentage is high and you're a guard or a wing that, you know, focuses on, you know, scoring, whether it's, you know, from beyond the arc or, you know, or as slasher, your numbers, you know, are going to be high. So I feel like, you know, just like the aspect of like looking at somebody's like an assignee's like G League numbers, like you have to, you know, go in depth, more in depth than you know, a per game basis, because like I said, the usage percentage and minutes that they get and just like the overall, you know, pace of the league. it kind of lies to you a bit.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And I've had people kind of, tons of Knicks fans have wondered the same thing. Like, these, like, both from the scores, from Deuce's stat lines, and then just from the highlights, like, it can get pretty freewheeling sometimes. So they're like, what should I do with this information about how great Deuce is doing? Because, like, me, personally, I was really high on Deuce, like, the highest of all draft Twitter, by coincidence, before the Knicks picked him. And that's cool, but, like, most people had Deuce closer to where he was drafted, like, late first, early second. So most people see, okay, late first, early second type player lighting it up in the G League, like a lot of other players do. So is this real? Is this not? I don't know. So I think most NBA fans are still kind of learning to figure out what to do with information from the G League, which is fine. And I think as the G League becomes more of a fixture for higher profile young players, whether it's through the Ignite or, you know, later first round picks on crowded teams or whatever, or even guys like Moody and Wiseman who are getting chances to practice, or in Wiseman's case, like, practice while rehabbing from injury and all that. Like, I think people will not, it's still, even though the G League, D League has been around for a while, it's still so new to people and it's evolving so fast that, like, we're nerds and we love this stuff, so we get to, like, keep up with it. But for most people, it's like, huh? Like, this is this thing that I know exists, but I don't know too much about it. So, which is why I'm so happy that, you know, folks like you are writing about it, and, you know, other places are finally starting to give it attention. I'm glad that they're throwing some of the G League games on YouTube, doing stuff like that. So, that's as good a place as any to wrap up. Thank you again for joining. This was super informative for me and hopefully informative for everybody who's listening and crossing their fingers that Deuce will get some damn minutes before the end of the season. Do you want to let folks know where they can find you? And if you want to plug any of your work, please go ahead, because more people need to know about it.
All right. So I can be found on Twitter at Dakota_Schmidt, DAKOTA_SCHMIDT, first name like the States, and last name like the letters that I just gave you. I don't know. I'm trying to be clever, but sometimes that doesn't work. But I have my own newsletter, The Call Up, that can be found at thecallup.substack.com, but it's also in the bio of my Twitter profile. And even though Westchester is not going to be in it, I am going to have, when you post it, if you previews of the Eastern Conference on Monday and the Western Conference on Tuesday. I'm not sure when you post this. So either the Eastern or both the Eastern and Western Conference playoff previews are going to be up when you listen to this. So if you want to learn about the G League playoffs, even though the Westchester Knicks are not going to be in it, that's going to be the place for you.
You heard the man. Go check that stuff out. Get your basketball knowledge up. Learn what's going on in the G League. Thank you again, Dakota. And on that note, everybody else, thanks for listening. Catch us on the next episode of Draft Strickland, where we will likely return to the million-dollar question of who will the Knicks pick with their lottery pick.
The New York Knicks. Here's David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick.